I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show, Hotel Mars episode, and this time we're headed into the solar system to the giant gas, Jupiter. David Livingston, my co-pilot, my colleague and friend, David, is of the space show. Would NASA be successful putting Juno, the NASA probe, into orbit around Jupiter? You've been watching this for 5 years. Has it been anxious, David?
Very anxious, especially the last 30 or 40 days. It's been really thrilling. And then there are some great videos out there of the moons orbiting Jupiter, which is a first. And that is just really dynamite stuff.
I came to this very late. The anxiety was gone by the time I saw the success. So we welcome now to help us understand what NASA's achieved and what the ambition is in these coming days and months. The Deputy Director of Science Communication for NASA, Dr. Michelle Fowler. Michelle, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. I begin with the story of the excitement, because we could all see on the video immediately from NASA headquarters and also globally, people jumping up and down and cheering. It was like a European soccer match where your team wins. How was it to be inside of this? Were you surprised by the enthusiasm?
Well, now that you say that, I think we definitely need some sort of song. I mean, when I think about European soccer matches and people standing up and singing, we really should have had a Juno song. We absolutely should have. It was wonderful. I mean, it's those times that you really live for when you work for NASA. It was a wonderful evening.
Were you jumping up and down, Michelle?
I was kind of bouncing up and down. It was a little different than the Mars Curiosity rover landing, because that one was a real nail biter. I mean, the idea that we landed this thing on Mars is actually, you know, even more difficult than going into orbit around Jupiter. That one I was uncontrollably screaming and jumping up and down. This one I was waving my hands in the air. It was still wonderful.
David?
I'm curious on the mission why they do an Earth flyby instead of going direct. Can you give us a short explanation of that?
I suppose the shortest explanation is money. So when you want to go directly out to Jupiter, you would need a really, really huge rocket. And those are expensive and they're difficult to build. And at the moment, we don't even have one that's actually that powerful. So it was launched on an Atlas rocket. And an Atlas rocket is a huge rocket. It's actually one of the largest ones the United States has right now. But even so, that didn't give it the velocity to get it out to Jupiter. So we actually sent it out. It looped around the orbit of Mars. And then it came back to Earth to get another gravity assist. And that gravity assist, it actually slingshot around the Earth. And that gave it enough power to get out to Jupiter.
Let's talk about the craft itself, now that we've got it launched. It's a five-year mission to go into to orbit. It looks like a very big spacecraft, 66 feet wide and 15 feet high. That means it's heavy. Is that true, Michelle? Have we loaded this up with a lot of, or is this a big, puffy, little bitty guy inside?
Well, the main size of the spacecraft is the solar panels. This is the farthest out mission in the solar system we've ever used solar panels. And out by Jupiter, the sun is actually pretty dim. So our solar panels needed to be incredibly highly efficient, and they also had to be very large. So we have three solar arrays that are about 30 feet apiece. The spacecraft itself is not that large. It's about a 12-foot by 12-foot box. And at the very top of that, there is a titanium vault. It's about 400 pounds of titanium, and it contains all the science instruments. So the body itself is only about 12 feet across, but the arrays are very large, like you said.
David?
I was going to ask you why you chose solar over an RTG. Is that because solar now is efficient enough to do it out to Jupiter?
Well, that's right. I mean, there are some missions where we still use the plutonium batteries, the RTGs. In this case, the solar panels are getting efficient enough to go all the way out to the outer solar system. Now we've done Jupiter. People are talking about, could you possibly do Saturn with solar panels? I think that this actually bodes very well for technology here on Earth, too. That I think as our batteries and our solar panels get more efficient, we may have some really excellent alternate forms of energy.
I want to speak about the instruments on board Juno, but before that, I read in the news, Doctor, that the first orbits are going to be 53 days, and then you're going to go to 14-day orbits of Jupiter, the gas giant. Why is that? Why the different kinds of days, and are they going to fly over different parts of the planet? Is that why?
It's not so much that they're flying over different parts of the planet, it gives us a chance to really check everything out before we go into a more intense science program. So we inserted ourselves into Jupiter's orbit on the evening of July 4th, and then we swung all the way back out for this long orbit. And that gives us a chance to test everything out, to make sure everything is working and up and running. The closer we get to Jupiter, the more intense the radiation and the more risk we take. So in some ways, this is a chance to make our final corrections, get everything, you know, all the I's dotted, all the T's crossed before we go in for the science mission.
David?
In terms of the intense radiation, in the manufacturing process of hardening these instruments, did they do anything special for Jupiter given the high-intensity radiation that they're going to encounter, or is it just regularly hardened instruments?
This one was special. I mean, there was a lot of computer modeling done about how much radiation would get through the titanium vault, because the science instruments are in this vault to protect them from the radiation, but we know the vault is not going to be perfect. Especially towards the end of the mission, we're going to be dipping sort of farther and farther into the dangerous areas of the radiation. So any sort of high-energy particles are going to hit the titanium and ricochet like bullets inside. And eventually that will actually mostly destroy the instruments. So the instruments were tested in high radiation environments. Of course, they had to be. We had to know that they would work in the environment around Jupiter. But we also were shielding them. So they were tested in the environment that we thought the shielding would give them. And, you know, of course, that's a bit of a guess. You know, I mean, nobody knows exactly how intense the radiation is around Jupiter's, around in the radiation fields. So we're really happy. Everything seems to be working very well.
I'm looking at photographs provided by NASA on the Juno website. This is the Juno spacecraft, and it's possible, and I'm telling everybody at home that they can do this, to click up and it and grows the scale so you can see the instruments on board. And I just want to go through some of them, Doctor, because mm-hmm. they have different purposes. And the one I'm keen on right now is the Jovian Infrared Auroral Mapper and the Plasma Waves Instrument. I love these names. These are external, outside of that that titanium box. What do they hope to achieve with the mapper, for example?
Well, Jupiter has a tremendously exciting aurora system. At the North and South Poles, there are these giant auroras that are far larger than our planet. And the Hubble Space Telescope just last week released a beautiful movie. You know, the Hubble is all the way here in low Earth orbit, but it could see these gorgeous auroras around Jupiter, and they change. And in the case of Jupiter, Jupiter in many ways really is like a little star with its own solar system. It just doesn't shine the same way our star does, but it has a tremendous impact with magnetic and electrical currents between the moons. You know, we have northern lights because of a magnetic interaction with the sun. And, you know, in the case of Jupiter, you can actually see what they call footprints. You can see these bright areas in the auroras where there are these incredible tubes of electric current that connect it to the moons, the large moons, the Galilean satellites, the four big ones, Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto. And so we're flying directly over the poles on this mission. This is the first time we're ever going to be able to really image the poles of Jupiter. And so, yes, the infrared auroral mapper is actually one of it's an international collaboration. The Italians are one of our partners on that. And then we also have a UV instrument that will be looking at it as well.
And the plasma wave instruments, is that special to Jupiter, or would that be any planet we'd be flying over?
Well, in the case of Jupiter, it is particularly exciting because Jupiter has this tremendous radiation field and you know, this tremendous amount of plasma, you know, this ionized particles. There are electrons in the magnetic field of Jupiter that are actually going around very close to the speed of light. And there are tremendous amounts of magnetic and electric energy. And so Jupiter is unique in our solar system in that it's a planet where, I mean, to us, yes, the Earth has a very significant magnetic field. It definitely helps us survive radiation from space. But Jupiter is an example of a place where those forces become dominant. And there are, you know, all the places in the universe that we know of where magnetic fields become dominant forces, like very close to a black hole or very close to a forming protostar. Jupiter is a local model for that, and we're going to be using all of these instruments to try to understand what things are like when you have a really, really intense magnetic field.
David?
Speaking of the instruments, you have the JunoCam on board, so do you have a timeline for when that's going to be available to citizens to image Jupiter?
Absolutely. So we hope to have our first images from JunoCam available probably in late August. So as was mentioned, we're starting out at a 53-day orbit. So right now we're actually orbiting away from Jupiter. We're going to go way far out, and then we're going to come back in. And we hope to have a movie of that first approach of Jupiter coming out sometime in late August. But then come November, when we go into our normal science operations, these 14-day orbits in and out of Jupiter, I should say near Jupiter and farther away from Jupiter, we hope to open it up to public voting. We will actually show the public different images in different areas where they might like to get even more JunoCam observations, and they can vote on which ones we should focus on.
We're speaking with Dr. Michelle Thaller, Deputy Director of Science Communications for NASA, about the Juno probe now in orbit around the planet Jupiter, the gas giant of our solar system. Dr. David Livingston, Dr. Space is with me, and we're going to turn to the big picture that NASA hopes, and I'm following their ambitions on the website, the NASA website, you can read along with me, why NASA hopes to discover, which is the origins of our solar system, the models that we have that we're working with, how we came to be the third planet from the sun. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show with my colleague and co-host and friend David Livingston of Dr. Space of The Space Show. And we're very pleased to have the Deputy Director of Science Communications for NASA, Dr. Michelle Thaller. We're discussing Juno, the probe, NASA probe, very successful, now in orbit around Jupiter, will be for the next year, as long as it can survive in harsh conditions of radiation and the unknown of Jupiter. And Michelle, I read from the NASA site that one of the ambitions you have is a big one, which is the origin of the solar system, how we were put together. You believe that the sun, the gas cloud that turned into our sun, contained material that wound up as Jupiter. And that the question is, how did it do that? And why does Jupiter have the remains of our sun, as I understand it? Does it have a core? Will we be able to answer those questions with the Juno mission?
Well, we certainly hope so. At least we hope to get a lot closer to the answers than we are now. So as far as the origin of the solar system, Jupiter has more than twice the mass of all the other planets combined. It is the real 800-pound gorilla in the solar system. So aside from the sun, which is now so hot and is burning away, you know, the interior is millions of degrees, the surface is tens of thousands of degrees, it really has ionized everything and doesn't give us a true record of what the nebula, the cloud that we formed out of, was like. Jupiter isn't that hot, and in its atmosphere, you have, well, pretty much most of the cloud that formed around the sun. Jupiter was the thing that sucked up most of that. We don't know whether it was one of the first things to form or whether there was a smaller rocky planet that formed first and then accumulated lots and lots of atmosphere over time. And we also have our suspicions that Jupiter didn't form where it is right now. We think it actually might have moved around a bit. There's increasing evidence that it might have actually come in as close as the orbit of Mars and sucked up all of that planet-building material as it went, and then it actually moved farther out into the solar system. When it did that, if in fact that's what happened, it probably killed the solar system that was there before. It probably sent planets careening left, right, and center, some falling into the sun, some being ejected from our solar system. So the story of Jupiter is certainly the story of the history of our planets and eventually how things calmed down and the Earth was able to form.
David?
So am I correct in understanding that because of the size of Jupiter, as, say, compared to the other outer planets like Saturn and the other, that it is more likely to have revealing information just because of its size alone?
I think that's sort of the point. I mean, this was the big thing. This was what actually took most of the solar nebula into it. And I'm really excited about our measurements to determine whether there's a solid core or not. Because, I mean, we don't know whether it formed as a solid planet with a big atmosphere that sort of got out of control, or whether it formed more like a little star. If it formed more like a little star, it may not actually have a solid core. And we've never been close enough to Jupiter to tell. And, of course, we can't see thousands and thousands of miles into Jupiter to see if there's a core. But what we can do is that we are actually swinging in so close to Jupiter around our orbits, we're actually going to go at about an altitude of 2,600 miles above the cloud tops, that the gravity alone, the way that the spaceship accelerates as it dives in towards Jupiter again and again and again, we'll actually be able to tell if there's any bumpiness to the gravitational field. And that will help us learn what the density profile inside the planet is. Is there a solid core or not? We should be able to answer that.
Jupiter's mostly hydrogen and helium, but you're looking for oxygen, meaning water or the makings of water. Why is that important, Doctor? And what will it tell us about the origins of the solar system?
There's so many things that turn out to be very important about water. And it's not just that, you know, you and I are water creatures and we come from this planet that's covered with water. Water is also responsible for some really amazing behaviors, the plate tectonics of rocks, the amount of water that's contained in minerals, not even liquid water, the amount of water just in the minerals itself really determines whether a planet is alive or not, we think. Now, we actually have been to Jupiter many times before. There were the two Pioneer spacecraft and then the Voyagers. And then we sent Galileo back in the late 90s that it was there. And Galileo dropped a probe into the atmosphere of Jupiter. For the most part, it orbited very far away from Jupiter and was surveying its moons. But it sent a probe to drop down and sample the clouds. And we hope that probe entered a very unusual place on Jupiter, because the readings seem to suggest there was almost no water in Jupiter at all. And the analogy I like to use is that what I think happened, and what we're hoping, honestly, is that if you could send one probe to Earth, you were an alien species, you couldn't see Earth, but you could only send one probe down to measure the water, and you landed in the Sahara Desert, then you might conclude that this is just a desert planet and there is no water. So we're hoping that the Galileo measurements turn out to be wrong. We think that Jupiter, as it sucked up all the material that planets were forming out of, would have sucked up amazing amounts of ice, tiny little protoplanets that contain both rock and ice. So we're trying to figure out where the water went, and will it give us some clue about how far out in the solar system Jupiter formed originally.
I like the idea of aliens coming to Earth and going to Vegas. That's what
right.
I like. Yes,
just
of course. There's no water on Earth whatsoever,
wow.
But they have a lot of fun in a place called Vegas. David, your turn.
In terms of going out to Jupiter when you were on the five-year mission, did the instruments hibernate, or were they collecting data and giving us information all along the way?
Well, I can't say about all the instruments. I would imagine that they were turned on, at least tested for a responsive signal. But there were two that were turned on very specifically. One was GenoCam. GenoCam is the high-resolution camera that I mentioned the public will be able to help us take images with. And GenoCam was turned on to give images of the Earth as it came by. And then the images look beautiful, by the way. This was one of the times where I started to get excited, is that when I saw these nice images coming back from Earth, I realized that this was going to be a beautiful image of Jupiter that was eventually going to be taken. The other one was that ham radio operators all around the world collaborated to send a radio signal up to Juno. And we were hoping that Juno would respond correctly to it, and it did. So all around the world, we had, you know, operators with their ham radios literally around the globe. They all sent a signal at the same time. Juno received it and actually sent back a message that said, hi, literally, H-I, hi.
The Great Red Spot, there are working theories. Does Juno have a package that can answer some of the questions about the Great Red Spot?
Well, absolutely. The Great Red Spot is this giant high-pressure system. It's actually different than a hurricane, although a hurricane is a pretty good analogy. It's three times the size of the Earth, and we don't even really know how old it is because it was there the first time we ever had telescopes to see it. So we don't know whether it's thousands of years old, whether it's millions of years old. We have an instrument called the microwave radiometer. And the microwave radiometer can actually receive microwaves at many different frequencies that, in effect, allow us to sort of X-ray our way through the clouds. And we can see down through the clouds to many different temperatures and pressures that will emit these specific microwave wavelengths. And in the case of the red spot, we should be able to see, we hope, about 500 miles down into the clouds. That will help us understand how deep the red spot is. Is this something that's just on the surface, or is this a very, very deep structure down into the atmosphere of Jupiter? It changes. You know, it's actually changing color right now. It's becoming a bit more sandy colored. It's gotten a little bit smaller. This is not something that may be around forever. It may disperse someday. So the microwave radiometer specifically is going to go right through the clouds and look for the core of the red spot.
Michelle Thaler, Michelle Thaler is Deputy Director of Science Communications for NASA. David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. Juno, at the end of its five-year trip, begins its one-year mission to give us some of the questions of the mysteries of our solar system. I'm John Batchelor. This is Hotel Mars, episode 8.